Well, the weekend's over, so it's time to chat about it. Got a midget and a Jew, so why don't you sit down and listen to our dope podcast during lunch, dinner, or breakfast. Brad Williams and Adam Ray are here for you any time of the day. So come on and treat yourself right. It's about last night.
So I did a lot of research about you, and I've learned something about you just sitting down here that I did not find in my research. Mm-hmm. You had a podcast where you talked to porn stars?
It's called The Morning After Podcast. It was The Morning After ... It was an ellipses podcast, because I think there's another one called The Morning After. Uh-huh. And we...
What is that one about?
I don't know. Probably something better.
They interview girls that have taken the morning after pill and just talk about their experiences.
Or they interview guys who've taken it. And,
or guys who bought it.
See how they feel. Yeah. Yeah.
Or guys who, yeah.
How was your experience in the CVS? Awkward? Yes.
Guys who've taken it is better. It can't do anything to you, can it?
Well, that's what the podcast is
about. Asking for a friend. Yeah, you're right. Wait, so okay, you would interview them the morning after they...
You know what's funny? I did it with Eli Olsberg, and we got into and out of the podcast game before it was profitable. So we were kind of dumb. And we started to build up a following on Twitter. We'd always been fascinated by porn, you know, like...
Yeah.
Because obviously you watch it, but also I love Boogie Nights. And I just thought it was like... because I always wanted to know... I love watching porn, but also I was like, it's a career. And when you start doing comedy... One thing we realized doing the podcast is comedians and porn stars have a lot in common, and you're a product, and you're promoting yourself, and you're pouring yourself out for work,
and you reveal way too much about yourself,
and there's
people
a reason
feel like
you're
they
led
know
there.
You,
yeah, exactly, and also people jerk off to you constantly.
I mean, and, I get that every day on Twitter.
I know I jerk off to you every day on Twitter.
From his website pictures or from dwarf.com?
I can't talk about
that. Okay, yeah. Next time you come,
but. Yeah, so we interviewed people because we were curious about most interviews with porn stars are just about like, oh man, can I electrocute your nipple? And I always thought that was dumb. And I was just curious, kind of like, what is your day to day? How does your family feel? Like, how'd you get into it? Because there's so many podcasts about how did comedians get into the game? And it's like, well, I want to know about porn. Is such a it's such a wild choice to make with your life, just from an economic perspective. And it in the same way that comedians' parents don't like comedians getting into it. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of porn stars' parents don't like it, and some do, and all that stuff. So that was what it was about. It was really fascinating.
Yeah, and it's one thing that's fascinating to me about that world and deciding to be in that world is you can't really dabble in that world. Because I had a friend that was like, listen, I just need some money, so I'm going to shoot like two scenes, and then I'll get out. I'm like... No.
Donate blood instead.
Donate your eggs. Do something. Start a GoFundMe because once you're in, you're a porn star.
I completely agree. Yeah, it's a little like it's a bold choice. And I find that fascinating. I find things fascinating that I would just never do. Not that no one's asking me to be in porn and I'd be bad at it.
Today.
The thing that I will say about the podcast, which is fascinating, we didn't just interview female porn stars. We interviewed male porn stars, gay porn stars, trans porn stars. And the people that are the craziest are the male porn stars.
Just think
about getting hard in front of people and having to like come on command. I couldn't do that. I have a lot of performance anxiety and in the bedroom. And to be able to do that means you can go somewhere in your brain, which I can't.
It's stressful enough when like you're with someone who you care about and they go, are you going to finish?
Yeah.
And that could fuck you up.
I mean, it's terrifying.
There's a lot of things that people can do on cue. Like I was mesmerized by when my friend Alan Christou in high school could fart on command.
Yeah.
And he would suck air into his anus, so then you would hear that sound, and then you would let it out, and there was no, it wasn't a fart. It was just a.
He could probably also be a very niche porn star.
Yes, that's what I'm saying.
Say, if he did that on film, he could make a lot of money.
There are a lot of skills. Yeah. But also, do you think porn is backup for a lot of people, or do you think it's like first choice? Like in high school, they're like, you know, filling out the...
I don't know the answer to that, but I think it's becoming more of a first choice. And the reason why I think it's more of a first choice now is because the internet. Mm-hmm. Kids are watching porn from younger and younger ages, and porn is now a little glamorous. Or you can have a career, people are talking about it, and you can watch porn from such a young age. So young girls are watching it and being like, I want to do that.
Yeah.
Here's the other thing, is that a lot of the porn stars that we met were nerds when they were in high school. And so they became porn stars because they wanted to... have like their sexuality be a part of them, and they never felt that they could as nerds, and they blossom into these like sex bombs. Mm-hmm. Is that the word? Sex bombs.
There has to be a
you
porn.
Can tell you've had a lot of sex in your life.
Look
and you're
at
like
me.
They're like sex bomb
come on command
women.
And I call women bombs.
There's got to be porn sites that are dedicated to just like the like they were nerds and now they're
oh, that's
you know,
so
fuck
much
bandits
of it.
Or whatever. You know,
fuck bandits.
I don't know. Just whatever
bandits
the site's called.
Bandits or bombs better? Yeah. I think they're equal.
Well, bandits. I mean, look. Well, bandits. What refers to like people who rob banks and stuff?
I think
that's
so.
Like yeah. Thelma Louise, Bonnie and Clyde.
Yes. Yes. Smokey and the
Smokey and the fuck bandits.
Smokey
yeah.
And the bomb.
And the bomb. Yeah. I don't know what you also hear. I mean, you know, people joke about like I even knew girls in college that. You know, in that year where people were like, I'm going to travel and see the world. They were mm-hmm. like, I might dance and strip and who knows what
and
else.
Escort.
And escort.
Yeah.
And, you know, I wouldn't judge because I'm like, fuck, man, we're all in this, like, I need money now situation mm-hmm. To survive. But I'm curious, like, how many people have done that and then stuck with it or done it out of plan A didn't work, you know?
I think a lot of people, well, I'll say this about escorting. I do think a lot more people have done it than we think about, than we realize, because I think a lot of people's feeling is like, I think a lot of men, especially, okay, so if it's young women, right, and they mm-hmm. have young, and they're heterosexual, and they have young men to choose from, a lot of young men don't know what they're doing in bed. Mm-hmm. And so I think a lot of women are like, why not get paid for it? Why yeah. the fuck not get paid for it? I'm not going to enjoy it anyway at this wow. point in my life. I have heard women say that, like, why not get paid for it? And yeah. There's something to it. I mean, it's interesting. I mean, no one
is that
one
why people
off-
become Subway sandwich artists? They're like, I suck at making sandwiches. Yeah. I might as well get paid for it.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I think that there's some, it's interesting. If we could, if people were offering us money for sex, if there was a high demand for
wow.
that,
wow.
I'd maybe do it just to yeah. see what it's like.
Yeah. It's yeah. how much you'd get.
It's flattering.
Yeah.
Test your body for the on the open
yeah.
market.
Yeah.
You know?
No one's ever offered
no.
me though.
Maybe after
were,
the show.
Maybe after the show.
Who knows,
I mean,
man?
TV fame does a lot.
If someone were offering me money, I'd be like, you need so much more help than I can give you by making you come. Like you're looking in the wrong place. Go to therapy.
Yeah.
I'm not
yeah.
your guy.
This is yeah. not your solution.
Yeah. I have hair on my back. Like you're not gonna like it.
But some people might.
Some people might.
I feel like every insecurity is a fetish. And that's a one-act play I'm putting on
that's really
this
good.
Weekend. Mm-hmm. That actually, by the way, you know sometimes you just say really poignant shit,
yeah.
and you're like, the amount of weed I smoked 3 nights ago, I'm surprised that sentence came out the way it did.
Yeah.
But it did, and I feel like there is some truth to it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. yeah. No, I agree with you.
You know?
Yeah.
So, who now that you've interviewed all these porn stars, has it sort of jaded it for you? Like, when you yeah. watch it, if you know the person or you talk to them or you or like they told you why they're in porn and maybe the story wasn't so glamorous and now you're seeing them and you can't really see them as a sexual being?
For sure.
Yeah.
It, which is probably good. I mean, like, you know what right. I mean? Like, it's probably good for it to not be so glamorous because
sure.
it's not glamorous. It's silly. It's two people rubbing their organs against each other. It's stupid. And for some reason, it's still exciting to us. But I think it's like in the way that at this point in my life, I just want to get work going. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I just want to, like, focus on work. Like, if I could cut off my balls without that being a huge problem, I would. because then I could just, like, sell more things and, like, live a good life where I'm happy. I don't want to
be concerned with that part
yeah,
of your life.
I just don't want to, like, sex is great. I just wish it didn't control everything. It's so annoying. It's like, I can't have enough of it to
yeah.
where I'm satiated. So having that demystified a little bit was good for me because I'm like, I'll just have to think about, I'll have to be more creative
yeah.
with what I'm attracted
so
to.
So you watch the characters on Game of Thrones that don't have balls like, oh, man, that's
they're,
the life.
They're lucky motherfuckers. Yeah. Yeah. That's
hey,
the height of privilege.
Hey, yeah. I could totally see that where it's like, well, I spend how many hours of my day consumed with, like, where am I getting it next?
Yeah.
How often?
I could be buying businesses. You know what
yeah.
I mean? If I didn't think about sex all the time, I could probably appreciate fine art more. You know what I mean? Like, I could probably do a
yeah.
lot for people.
You
can
go.
I'm like
you could
coming
go
into socks. Yeah, it's like I'd rather like you know I'd rather meet the most interesting people in the world, but I can't because I'm coming all the time.
Yeah, but I did hear Stern say one time. I think Stern's in his early 60s or late 50s, and he was saying how great it was that he doesn't. He still, you know, masturbates and whatnot, but he just doesn't want it as much. And he's like, I have more time for other shit. And he's like, and it's great not wanting it. I'm like, I guess when you can't control right? The
it'd be it
the lack of urge,
because if you don't want it, then you don't want it.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
You probably want something else. You could travel. You could like maybe learn how to make a nice espresso. But for then your it's wife.
Like, but then it's sort of read a book. Some yeah. sort of valuable skill.
Maybe that's how you come now yeah. with good deeds.
Yeah, it is.
that would be a great SNL sketch.
Thank you.
Of just someone that comes with good deeds
because they're abstinent.
Yeah. So they don't have sex, but when they help that dwarf get the Lucky Charms from the top shelf, they're like, wait, what? Well,
maybe it's a great movie too. A guy can't come anymore, and the only way, and he's a shitty person, mm-hmm. so God takes his ability to come away, and the only way he can come is by doing good for people.
Yeah.
There it is.
Interesting God.
So as long as Morgan Freeman plays the God and just goes, listen. You are a shitty person.
But then it turns out in the end that's just what turned God on. So God's just been jerking off the entire time. I'll fucking fund that movie.
Yeah.
God's
just sitting up there like,
what a twist.
Oh, yeah.
And the guy gets up there.
Help that old woman across the street. Yeah, you learn help that old woman.
You learned a valuable lesson. And also,
I would love to end a movie that cost $100 million on God coming. That's like, can you think of a better way to spend money?
I cannot. I just tried to. I cannot.
Yeah.
I thought that's what it was when a few weeks ago when Elon Musk launched that SpaceX thing and you literally saw the entire sky light up with this off white color. I'm like, did God just ejaculate?
100%. I mean, that's a guy who can only get off. Like, he probably cut his balls off a while ago.
Yeah.
And because he's like launching rockets and trolling Instagram and the whole, he's making a whole city think it's ending. Like, that's what he gets off on now.
Yeah. That's who that guy is. It's funny that like someone, he recently revealed that, we're talking about Elon Musk, that he attended a sex party
in
Silicon Valley. People are like, is he fit to be CEO now? It's like, they're all doing that.
Yeah, what are we talking? What's the point of being a CEO?
Yeah.
If you're not going to go to a sex party.
Yeah, it's like,
what are we talking
it's
about?
It's like, it appears this heavy metal singer did some cocaine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm always amazed. I think
that's why you do it.
I think we're in comedy, so we're kind of a little, it's easy to forget what mm-hmm. most people find to be risque. Because it's like, we're heard everything. I don't care what anyone does. It's all just like, oh, they're doing that crazy thing? Well, I'll talk about it now. Like, right. I don't care about anything, but most people still, care about stuff.
Yeah, and we'll transition this into your new show, Corporate, which is on Comedy Central. Yeah, buddy.
Big deal to get a show, to make the show, and get the show on.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, and so, like, when you're... It's been described, and we watched it, and I would say it's a dark comedy, but... When you're writing it, do you not see it as a dark comedy?
You know, I wonder what you guys think about this because, you know, we've all done stand-up together. It's like the jokes, a good joke is often pretty dark. I mean, or like, what is dark?
Yeah.
Because I'm just making a joke.
Yeah.
That's what I think is funny.
I think it's the people's interpretation.
Right.
And where their threshold for, and what they're accustomed to, the environment, what they're also usually, if someone who's like, man, Raffy is so funny, then yeah, you're going to be like, wow, Tim Allen is super dark,
but
you know?
But someone who thinks Raffy is funny is fucked up. Like, that's fucking crazy. Yeah. Like, that's so much darker because, like, who touched you at 5?
Right.
And then Raffy.
Yeah. And then that's where your sense of humor is locked in.
Yeah. It's like, with darkness, it's like, I'm pretty aware I'm going to die. That's fucked up.
Yeah.
I'm thinking about it a lot. Like, there's crazy shit. There's drones all over the world. Like, there's
suicide. We have devices that can be turned on and off and, like, monitor us from whatever version.
My parents got divorced. Like, I'm not being dark. I'm just, like, accurately reflecting what's going on
in my opinion.
And so it is dark. I mean, I'm not naive. I understand that we're going for a certain tone. But I just more think that, like, I just think that darkness is based on most people's inability to look at life in a normal way.
Interesting.
That's sort of how I'm coming from it. I just also like suicide jokes. I think they're funny and they help me cope with life.
Well, if you like suicide jokes, you're going to love the pilot.
I think you will.
Of Corporate.
Yeah.
Because there's plenty.
Yeah, but I mean, you guys have dark jokes too. It's like, to me, also when you do comedy, words don't mean as much to us as they do the audience.
Yeah.
They're just things we're manipulating people with.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And it's important. They carry weight, but also, like, I'm just laughing at how clever someone is.
Yeah,
pretty much.
How that and like jokes that we have that other people would consider to be dark. It's like, yeah, but that's just the story. That's what happened.
Right.
So I can't. And it's funny because it's out of the ordinary.
I also wasn't raised religiously. I mean, I was sort of raised Jewish, but like I didn't give a shit. So I don't have anything holding me back. Like, and my dad's kind of a crude guy. So
yeah,
I don't.
Really?
I just don't. Like, I don't care. I'm like, what are we talking about? Why are we pretending that we're not all fucking insane and like coming all the time?
That was my. Well, we are. That was my question, and we love hearing this backstory from any guest and great comic. Is like, what was your Vermont you grew up in?
I grew up in New York.
New York. Where does Vermont tie into your life?
It does not.
Great. Brad, that you fucking...
Wait. That's another Jake Weissman. I believe that's a musician or a filmmaker.
Okay.
There's another all Jake of our Weissman. And no, I love this.
Let's actually try to answer it.
Are already confusing your podcast for another podcast. Wait, are you Jake Weissman, the porn star?
There was a Jake Weissman who did film reviews for his hometown paper in Vermont. And for a while, he was
beating
me.
That's what I have here.
He was beating me. I'm going to pretend I'm this guy. So he was beating me for a long time. Shit. And then recently, I was thinking there's a few other Jake Weissmans who are like, fuck my name, fuck that guy, he's killing us right now. So I'm winning the Jake Weissman war.
Yeah.
That guy, I believe, made some films, but I'm definitely in the lead.
From the producers of Charlie Wilson's War comes Jake Weissman's War.
Yeah.
A way less violent, more dramatic, and even slightly Jewier.
He's taking the name back. Taking the name back, other Jake Weissmans.
Yeah. There was also a Jake Weissman who lived in Ohio who was an Abercrombie model.
Perfect.
Who did this. He was on a website called Teen Transformation of the Week, where he was really fat and then he got really fit.
Yeah.
And I found him on Twitter. I followed him and I would retweet everything he said because it was just like, I just want to get uber ripped, or I love smoking weed and pumping iron. I love
but
my
not
ass.
In that order.
And you're like, let's see what other Jake Weissmans are doing.
I retweeted him every single time, and eventually he DM'd me, goes, how come you RT everything I say? And I go, well, I just really like what you have to say, and I think you're a good representative for Jake Weissmans. And he blocked me.
Kudos for him picking up on the sarcasm.
He picked up on it. Yeah. He's way hotter than me, though. But I think I'm still winning.
But this is something that now, because we all have this information, like, there's another Brad Williams who has this memory thing where he can remember every single moment of his life.
Oh my god.
And like, so I've been asked that on radio shows where people are like, so what'd you have for breakfast exactly 14 days ago? I'm like, I have no fucking clue. Like, more than
That's
likely
also
Lucky
like,
Charms.
I believe that guy, but he could be lying. You know what I mean?
Right.
He's probably the best liar of all time.
He could very well be where
it's weird.
What happened January 3rd, 1979?
Brad Williams is also like a pretty normal name. You know what I mean? It's like, I'm an American. Hi.
Right.
Dave
Smith, whatever the hell.
Yeah, that's really annoying.
Yeah.
Is there any first name Williams? Like, was there like a Williams Brad or like...
Yeah, Williams,
or Williams is a first
is
name because Bill...
Yeah.
That's William.
It would be Bills. That would be the name.
Oh yeah,
William Bills.
Bill Anderson. Actually, it's Bills.
Yeah,
it's short. It's short for Williams.
Yeah,
that's my first name.
Yeah.
How often are you cognizant of things in your like? To me,
please tell me you at least worked at a chandelier store.
I did.
I got that right.
Put a pin in that.
Okay.
How much now? I want to hear the process of putting the show together.
Sure.
But how much now in like everyday life and conversations and even talking about this guy, the other Jake Weissman, and being on a site where they turn where guys are chubby that now get ripped and having that interaction, like to me, like my brain immediately goes like, oh man, if I had a show, I would somehow work that in. Like that's a hilarious storyline.
Oh, that's a good point.
Or even like whether you guys find him online, and because you know the brilliance of your show is like how many. I feel like open form being in having the backdrop of The Office,
right?
But then so much stuff, right? Anything, right? I mean, like, is it pretty openly creative?
Yeah.
For what happens?
It's interesting. It's like it's hard to know sometimes when you're making a TV show, and I only have this experience, like, how much to do specific to your life and if that is relatable. Like, you know, sometimes like if it's something that you do, like this is the same thing on stage. If you're like doing relatable comedy, like something that you do every day, you have to then realize this might be something other people do, even though I'm a weird fuck. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so, like, if I want to investigate another Jake Weissman, though, on the show, my name's Jake Levinson.
Yes.
So I'm like, is that interesting? It's hard to know if that's interesting to other people.
Immediately, I thought, like, man, that would be hilarious that to see your character.
Honestly, that's
find
a good
that.
Pitch. That's a really good pitch, and we had not thought of that yet.
Great.
Yeah. That's
well, a really good well, I'm available pitch. On Tuesdays and Thursdays.
I'll pay you for that.
What if I was such a dick and, like, sent you a Venmo request?
There are pettier comedians
I know
that would
are.
Do that.
Absolutely. Yeah. But, hey, that I mean, I feel now in this age of social media where you can literally see what's going on in so many people's lives. Yeah, I think that's something that other people have done is you know, people have Googled themselves and then you find out there's some other person that has your name that's way more successful.
I don't know if you guys have ever done I do have a fantasy of meeting other Jake Weissmans and like sitting down and being like, how's your life been with this name? But I think in the
end, that's such a great episode to me.
It is a good episode.
And maybe it is like you all get together and when the Abercrombie Jake guy helps train group. You to become... Like, maybe he's Potter. The only one that's like that. And so all you collectively are just like, can we get this Weissman to make us, or Levinson to get us all hot or something? You know?
Yeah, no, that's a good idea.
I just talked myself out of the writer's room. But.
No, but what I was actually thinking, in reality, I think if I met the guy, I'd be like, I don't really want to know you. Like, I don't like you at
all. Of course.
Like, you're boring as fuck, which I think could actually be funny as well. If it's like built up and it's like, yeah, I'm just a guy.
Yes.
Like, we have the same name. It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you didn't grow up in Vermont?
If I
scratch
it'd
these
be funny
Vermont
to,
questions.
It'd actually be funny. I mean, I'm attracted to women, but it'd be funny to meet a Jake Weissman and fall deeply in love with him. Okay. To marry
that's
someone with your
funny.
Same exact
yep.
name.
That's
oh.
super funny.
Well,
I had this weekend... I was doing shows in Naples, Florida, and a guy literally came up to me and said, "Hey, Brad, great show. I'm Dylan. This is my wife, Dylan." And I went, "The fuck?"
There's a few names like that are androgynous, like Sandy.
Yeah.
There's Samford and Sandy. There's also Lynn used to be a boy's name because it was like Lynn Nolan Ryan.
My middle name, Morgan.
Yeah, that's, Morgan. Yeah. Brett. Brett is a...
Yeah.
Is a it doesn't,
so that can happen. You can literally marry someone that has your... And to me, like, I would never get over that.
You couldn't, yeah.
I can't. And does that mean there's something wrong with me?
It would be fun to call out your own name during sex, though.
Dylan.
Yeah.
You're really doing
it. Narcissism and get away with it.
Yeah, it's like, so now you're one of those weird people that talks about themselves in third person, but it doesn't seem as creepy.
My friend, I introduced two people who later got married, and the guy's name is Chris, but his last name is Sawchuck, and he goes by Sauce. So when he met,
I love those guys.
Yeah,
I just met a guy who was like, great. "My name's Chad. My friends call me Cheese."
Yeah,
I go, dude,
I love it.
Stop talking to me.
Yeah.
But also just send me an email with your address so I can show up. We can hang that way because this is too much to take in.
Yeah,
Sauce.
It is too much, and she ended up. So my friend Kristen ended up marrying him, and. Took his last name and she still calls him Sauce, but I'm like, you're Sauce. You're both Sauce now, so you don't get to call him Sauce.
No.
Which I just think is odd.
Yeah, I call my wife Dwarf.
Yeah. Yeah. That's how you come, so yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Wait, so okay, so New York City then.
So I was born in the city. I then moved to Brooklyn for a little bit, and then
way before
it was cool. And then there was like some sort of violence outside, like on our street. So my mother convinced my dad to move to the suburbs. So I grew up in the mostly Jewish suburbs of New York. And then I went to school in Nashville, Tennessee.
Whoa.
And because I was just tired of being around other Jews. It's like I like Jews, obviously, a lot.
So you went to the place where they're also tired of being around other Jews.
I wanted to be a victim real badly.
Right.
But it was actually.
Why'd you kill him?
Yeah. And it was interesting because there was some anti-Semitism there, but I mostly just stayed friends with the only Jews that were there. I was mostly friends with. But yeah, I went to school there because I was just tired of like living in the Northeast and just around the same people who thought. Even though I agreed with them, I was like kind of tired of it.
Yeah.
And then after school, I took a film class one of the last years that I was there, and I decided, well, I like this is really fun. I don't want to do anything serious in my life, so I just drove out to LA because I had a cousin who was a producer who I knew could get me a PA job.
Wow, so that was your in.
Yeah, that was me in. So I mean, it's a shitty in. Have you guys ever PA'd?
I have not.
Yes. PA'd for a PBS series, a jazz standards thing at the Jim Henson Company for a couple months. And then what else did I PA on?
Oh, Hollywood Squares.
Oh, wow.
When Henry Winkler was running it with this other guy, when it was still like, I mean, I met the guy who did Kermit the Frog, who did it, Steve Whitmire. I mean, it was still, it was when it was, the last time it was on, when it was like,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
Martin Mull was there, I met John Ritter.
Who was Center Square? Was that the Whoopi years?
Great question. I think it was Martin Mull.
Martin Mull was Center
And I remember
Square.
I pitched, I remember Henry Winkler, so great, because his son Max was my fraternity, he's a good buddy of mine, and Henry became, you know, I met him, I've told the story before, he came into my frat and was like, "Hello, I am Henry Winkler, Max's father. I have some clothes for him, his laundry. Would you mind holding on to it for me?" And I go, "Yeah, of course. And by the way, this is an honor to meet you." He goes, "Thank you so much. Just here's the bag of clothes. Real quick, you're not going to shit on his clothes, are you?" I go, "Excuse me?" He goes, "It's a fraternity. I know you guys are crazy. Just make sure nobody shits on these clothes." I go, I just start laughing. I go, "Henry, I guarantee you have my word. No shit will touch these clothes unless it's Max's, but that I can't control." And he's like, "Great, thank you so much."
It's like, can I piss on them? You're only outlawing shit?
Yeah.
Just that one bodily fluid.
Wow.
But I PA'd, and I remember one day, and it was so long hours, and he let me sit in one of the writer's rooms. They're pitching things for shows. That's one, they were going to do famous TV dads. And they were going around pitching, and I was sitting in the corner, and I remember Family Matters, one of my favorite shows, and I go, "Reginald Vell Johnson is in the corner." And Henry goes, "Great, love it. Carl Winslow, yes. Adam, thank you." And then afterwards he goes, "Great call on the suggestion.
Oh my
Carl
God.
Winslow, yes." He goes, "Come to the meeting tomorrow." Didn't get asked back.
Yeah, of course.
But for that one moment, cool I was moment. Like,
"Who's that PA that talked?" Don't let him back. Cut that.
Remember how we said you can talk if you have a good idea?
You know.
Don't talk.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool. But like, PAing is it's long hours. You don't do a lot.
Yeah.
Thankless.
In some ways, you think it's an in because you're technically working in the industry, but it's you kind of shouldn't do it because it's like, I mean, some people have gotten work out of it.
Brent PA'd for Conan, and that seemed like a pretty cool gig.
It sort of helped, but then it didn't. It's weird because it could help you if you really have your shit together, but it's sort of like it's more what it taught me is this industry is hard and you have to hustle and you really have to be on top of your shit and that you don't want, basically what PAing taught me was you don't want to be a PA.
Well, so, Brad PA'd for this podcast. That's how he got to be a co-host.
Yeah, exactly.
Really good job.
I was getting Adam's coffee and now I'm behind the mic.
And then you still get his coffee.
And you know, but then I get to talk.
That's really great.
I get to talk about his coffee.
Yes.
What did you, when you're doing it, did you have, I mean, was it just so frustrating? Were you like, I want to be doing more than this? Like,
yeah, I mean, I worked on Clerks 2, which sucked because, you know, they're like Jersey people, which are a very specific virus.
New York hates Jersey, don't they?
And they were, I mean, I hate it, but if someone confronted me, I'd be like, please don't hurt me. You guys are great. Yeah. I had to like clean up Jason Mewes' hotel room and do all this crazy shit. And I was like, this fucking sucks. So I ended up becoming an assistant to a director, and then I got into post-production simply because I didn't know what else to do, but it was easier. It's like post-production is its own world.
Yeah.
And I started to fail upwards a little bit, and then I hit 26 years old, and I was like, why did I move out here? This can't be why I moved out here. So that's when I was friends with Guy Branum.
Oh, nice.
And so I started going to open mics just to watch, and then I just on a whim decided to do comedy. So that's how I got into comedy. I just hated my job in post production.
So there wasn't, you didn't move out here with like the
no,
I'm
which is
be
a
comedian.
Weird thing.
Yeah.
It's kind of weird. I just wasn't really a comedy nerd growing up. Not that you have to be, but I didn't think I was that funny. I just thought I was kind of weird. Like, I wanted to make movies.
Yeah.
And I always liked comedy and would, like, joke around with friends, but I just never... It's that thing where I don't know how you guys feel about this. I don't necessarily know how you guys got into it, but, like, unless you know you can do it, you don't think it's something people can do. Like, I have that childhood, like, sort of myth of, like, watching someone on TV being like, you don't know that they did thousands of open mics.
No.
You don't know they did 5 shows a night for 10 years. No. You're just like, they're funny.
Yeah.
And so that was my issue, was like, I didn't think of it as an option. And then when I started to see Guy Branum doing, I was like, oh, he's hilarious, but he still does these terrible shows all the time and open mics. That's how you do it.
Yeah.
And so I just on a whim tried it.
Yeah.
And loved it immediately.
Immediately. And it was weird. It was almost like, I've tried to describe it as like, it's almost like an orientation about myself I didn't know. It's like, oh, I'm a comic. Like, I didn't know that I wanted to do that because it's such a, it's kind of a shitty thing to say. It's like, I think I'm funnier than other people.
Oh, it's a huge ego
thing.
Well,
you're not saying that. Yeah. But I think people recognize the work and the difficulty of it to where you're not But yeah, I don't know.
I don't know.
Subconsciously, you are saying that, right?
You have to have an ego about you to be able to be like, no, I'm gonna walk up. I should be able to walk up in front of a couple hundred people, and they should all shut the fuck up while I talk. That's very.
And obviously, we have a lot of insecurity, but sure. Also we have that thing. It's like, no, but I'm kind of hilarious. So like, it's a weird mixture, and I think it's. I just didn't know that about myself. And then when I started to do it, I was like, oh, this is like the, I mean, it's hard as fuck and can be a nightmare, but it's the best thing. There's no better thing.
Yeah.
Do you remember your first, what you talked about your first time, where it was?
I told sort of, I was at this open mic in Culver City called, it was called the Spot Cafe. It later changed to like Synergy Cafe. It was one of those like, they always had an open mic, but it changed hands like six times, sure. One of those. And I think I told, the first ones I told were like little like Wendy Liebman-esque misdirects, which I don't do at all. But just like, I was shaving my back, like just stuff that doesn't make any sense, but just like trying to shock people about the word I use, you know, that kind of thing. It wasn't very good. I had no point of view at all. I was really angry that I was like working at a job I hated. I honestly wasn't even thinking in terms of joke structure. I just was saying things I thought were funny, and it wasn't.
It's kind of the, but I mean, I don't know. When you're starting out, I'm always like curious, like, what is the best way to just go up there and do what you're doing and just start talking and figure out and learn from that, or to really sit down and write jokes and go up there? And you're almost kind of getting in your own way of deciding how you're going to do something before you even know what that is you're going to do.
I think you just dive in head first and figure it out, because smart people who are attentive and love it absorb it and eventually figure it out. And the only way to do it is to fail thousands of times.
Yeah.
I mean, just however you do it.
So what about it as you self-described, as you were failing, what about it made you keep wanting to go back?
Well, the one thing that I really liked about it was it forced me to write constantly, which I originally came here because I wanted to make movies, and it's like I wasn't really finishing scripts. But with comedy, you have to write pages and pages and pages to get one joke sometimes, you know? I mean, it gets better as you go on, but you have to write, you have to spend your whole life writing just to get anything going. And I liked how much it focused me. And even though, you know, and I don't know how you guys feel about this, but I've never been as inspired by the genius people. Like Richard Pryor doesn't inspire me because he's Richard Pryor.
Yeah.
But people who aren't funny, who kill it, they inspire me, because it's like, oh, I could do that. And they're making a living. Oh, right. They're not that funny, but people love that person. Well, then I could definitely at least do that, because there's no way that person's smarter than me. Mm-hmm. And so I just started to see at open mics people who were like doing well, who'd been on TV, and like, oh, I was like, wait, that's it? I thought you had to be like Jimi Hendrix, you know,
right,
to like
the open mic, to even get up at the open. Yeah, you thought maybe there was a pre-audition before the to even get up on that stage,
or even people who headline the improv. Sometimes I'm not trying to talk shit, really. I'm not. I'm impressed by the fortitude of people who aren't that good, who figured it anyway. I actually genuinely find it impressive. But I started to see people. I went to so many open mics, like, you know, three a night every night, and I was like, oh. I could at least do that.
And you need that.
Yeah.
And that, and also is another thing you don't get if you're not around and go and putting in the work to be at these shows. Mm-hmm. Because, and guess what, man? Like, having a little bit of ego at the get-go, and even now, like, you have to have some, but like, you know, you can filter out how much you know, if you become a true asshole or getting in your own way with things. But recognizing that, like, you can do it, and seeing people that you go, oh yeah, that's like, I talk about something that might be similar, but I think what I'm doing is funnier. Like, you have to also recognize that. And that's from seeing so much. Do you think now, do you try to watch a lot, or you watch less because you don't want to be influenced? I know some comics don't like to.
I think I watch less. I mean, I also, it's not just about being influenced for me. It's, I want to still love it.
Yeah.
And it's hard for me to watch a lot of stand up and not see all the mechanics, even the brilliant people. It's like, but I still see where it's going. Like, most of the time, it's like, even if the bit is great, I'm like, but I see what you did.
Yeah.
And I don't, and that's just, that's good that you have that ability, but I still want to, it's like watching too much porn. You know what I mean? Like, I still want to enjoy sex. Like,
I know you're both
bit.
Coming here.
Yeah.
And I know you're going to make that face, because that's your face.
It's my face.
Yeah.
But I want to still love it, because it can't, even though when it's the best, I think I can get a little bogged down. There's only so much to talk about.
Yeah.
And so I think for me, it's like, it's stand up to me, there is a sacred element to it. It's like, it really is a beautiful, incredible thing. I think it changed my whole life. It saved my life in a lot of ways.
I totally agree.
Yeah. So I don't want to overdo it, because too much stand up, it's great, but it's like, there's nothing to look forward to.
Oh, I think we can all attest to getting stand-uped out, is how I refer to it, where I'm just like, if I don't, you know, A, you got to, you know, the old cliche of having a life worth writing about, but like straight up, you know, when you feel yourself being like, oh, I got to go to the club, that should never...
Yeah,
I mean, it can happen, and that's fine, because it is sometimes the strain of life and being tired. Yeah, it is a job. But then I'd say 10 out of 10 times, if I'm not feeling it and I go, either being around people that I hadn't seen or getting on stage or ended up doing something I hadn't planned, something in that evening and that experience makes me go, oh, thank God I have this.
You know, it's funny. I because I've been making this show, I haven't done as much stand-up as I normally have done. And one of the cool things about that is when I go, I haven't seen people go up in 6 months. Mm-hmm. So that much, you know what I mean, for the most part. So
that's cool.
People that I haven't seen that I love, I haven't seen any of their material. So when I watch, I'm like, this is all new and it's great.
I love it.
It's like, oh, wow, I'm watching stand up again for the first time. And I genuinely a fan, as opposed to hearing the same jokes over and over.
And then just you hear the one line differences. Yeah. So then you don't.
You see the lever being pulled. I'm like, this is amazing. Yeah. So it's kind of fun.
Are you having fun kind of getting back into it again?
There's an anxiety. I mean, like, I know it'll be fine. It's not riding a bike, but it sort of is, you know, mm-hmm. where you just kind of have to do it. It's just that anxiety of, like, both you do it constantly and are obsessive and touring. But if you had to stop for a few months, like, the first time back, it's exciting, but also, like, have I forgotten how to do this completely?
Oh, dude. Shit.
And I feel bad.
I have that when I take a week off, and then that first Thursday show... of the weekend, I'm sitting here like, what do I say next?
What happens to me is I go on stage, let's say it's a 15-minute spot at the store or something, and I go, if I haven't done it in a while, I go on and go, I don't think I have more than 2 minutes. I'm almost sure all my material ever is 2 minutes.
Yeah.
And then eventually you just walk up stage, you're like, oh, I didn't even get to like any of my jokes. But there's always that fear, like, I can't fill the time. That's terrifying.
Good. I think it's healthy.
Yeah.
If you're completely comfortable and you get complacent. And,
yeah.
And also probably working on the show, what is that dynamic like of the hours, the workload, the anxiety that maybe stand-up doesn't provide?
Yeah, what's interesting about it, and this is a privilege and also tough, is if you have something like a show, which is obviously very hard to get, and if you get that chance and you really want it to be good, you really do have to focus on it. So what was helpful is to be like, I can't do really stand-up. I have to not think about stand-up too much or writing too much stand-up right now. All of my funny has to go into this show. Because if this show is a hit, I can do whatever stand-up I fucking want. Yep. You know what I mean? Like, and that's like very important to me.
You made that adjustment early on?
I just knew. I had talked to some people who had gotten some shows that are like, don't make that mistake of diluting what you're doing, because stand-up will be there.
That's Adam did it with Workaholics, you know? Like, he just was... And I would be like, you gotta do some sets, and every now and then he's like, dude, I'm putting literally every ounce of what I'm doing into this,
and it worked.
Yeah
it worked. And it's tough, because stand-up is like the most purely awesome thing. We all know that. There's nothing like that. But
no, that's the right move.
But some jokes that I didn't stand up, I put into the show, because it's like, but they'll live forever.
That's awesome.
Millions of people might see it.
Awesome.
if it's hit. So you have to sort of just like be like, this is what I'm doing. I go home at night and I rest so I can write in the morning. I see all the stand-up shows and I want to do it. But then you're like, no, it's play the long game. This is like, you're going to be around for a long time. But it's hard, but it clearly is beneficial.
Yeah. And that's, you don't want to be stressing out about your 15-minute set at the Comedy Store while you have something that is the opportunity that you've worked so hard to get is the show. And you're doing more than acting on this show. This is you are,
it takes everything.
Writing the show.
Yeah. Producing it, casting the show, it, all that shit.
Casting it. Yeah.
And also the thing is too, is stand up is like such a, it's beautiful, but you're tortured by it. So I at least for me, it's like if I work all day, then I'm a little tired. I go up at like 12:30 or 1 in the morning at the store. Don't have that good a set, because I'm not going to ever murder at 1 in the morning. Then I'll think about it. I won't sleep. I'll come into work the next day with 3 hours sleep and be like, I suck. I'm not funny. Yeah. Everything I say is dumb.
I'm a big advocate of those sets can carry over to the next day. Yeah. But don't like, like when I was having, doing policies or something, a lot of auditions, and I'm like, oh, I got my 12:30 spot. Like, maybe I don't do that, because it could go either way, and I need to be feeling good about tomorrow morning.
It's weird. I mean, you guys are working professionals. You have to think of it as a career.
Yeah.
You know, we need health insurance. We need money. You have to like, okay, what? Stand-up is the most fun thing. It's like you're a little kid, like having fun, and people are listening to you. It's like the most intense, fun experience of your life. But you go, but is that, what do I need to do? I need money, and I need to like do things that people will, it's confusing.
Is it weird to be here now at the show, Wednesdays on Comedy Central?
Wednesdays at 10.
At 10. How much do you feel in the moment now? Do you have just flashbacks to pitching the show, putting it together, being like, oh, I hope it gets picked up. Oh, man, it did get picked up. Now we got to make it. Like, those are all different stages of, yay, dude, fuck, right?
Dude, not only that, but, like, all the way back to, like, some open mics. Or, like, when you're, I would go to the Sunset Grill open mic all the time. Like, and just, it was such a bad open mic. And just how many hours I was sitting there, like, waiting for an hour to speak to no one. Mm-hmm. And I was like, God, I really hope this pays off. Like, I might have really fucked up. So, there is, like, a beautiful part about that. We're like, oh, I did. Oh my God. Yeah. I kind of got, at least for now, like I figured out a way to make money out of this. Thank God. But it feels like even going through it and you understand it step by step by step. And also I do believe talented people get where they're going eventually. Not everyone the same way and it's circuitous, sure. But
or
I do think like if you're funny and you keep working, something will happen most of the time. But I didn't know that at the time, you know? So it does feel like a miracle a little bit. It feels like I came to California in the 1800s and found gold. Yeah. You know what I mean? That's sort of how it feels.
And it was not you who just created it, right?
It was me, Matt Ingebretson, who's a stand-up, and hilarious. Pat Bishop, who used to do stand-up, but mostly he directed everything.
Oh, dope.
He's a really talented director and editor and a great writer.
How crucial, I'm only assuming, like similar to other shows that have had built-in the camaraderie, best. I mean, just makes everything.
Workaholics did that. Yeah. And I think that's a huge part of why it works is if you can get three or four smart people to agree, it's going to be good. And I think like if only two agree, you got to figure out how all of you agree. And even though it can be frustrating sometimes, the built-in mechanism, if funny people think something's good and everyone agrees, it'll be good.
Yeah.
And I think like you don't, Comedy Central, luckily, working with the network can always be frustrating, but they let groups of people make shit. And they trust YouTube. They trust like things that worked on YouTube.
Well, you're women. That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah. You put up some fucking beast comedy sketches.
Yeah.
Over the years, and in an age where it's like that matters, and
it
got the views and the content match up, so they're seeing that and that.
That's what it is.
Yeah.
And so if you hone it there and you're making it, you know, in your backyard on a Saturday and it's for no money, but that's the kind of shit where you're working together. Eventually you'll get that chance. And then because it's weird when you go from like making YouTube sketches for literally no money or the price of a pizza, basically, then you go to a pilot that costs hundreds of thousands of dollars. What's interesting is in some ways it's easier because you have all these really smart people helping you,
yeah.
As opposed to before it's just you know. So it's obviously terrifying because you got to nail
it.
But
I'm not that
you
smart.
Do have really talented people who are more talented than you helping you achieve that goal.
Well, yeah, and even just something as small as, oh, wouldn't it be great if we had this prop, and then you have a prop master going, yeah, I got
that's my job. Yeah,
yeah,
that's my literal job.
I can provide that for you. You're like, wow, this would have taken an entire day of us going to Staples,
yeah,
and like Office Max and searching for this thing.
100%.
Yeah, and then, but you don't necessarily have a lot of corporate experience, or
no?
I
don't really have corporate experience.
Yeah, that's mostly the other guys.
Matt worked at a bunch when he first came out here. Worked a bunch of like terrible social media jobs for different like huge companies, in the entertainment industry, and it's just a nightmare. Like, we're so lucky to do what we do. Like, everyone is so unhappy at those jobs, and it's all just fear, and shit rolls downhill, and people are yelling at the people below them and taking shit from the people above them. Mm-hmm. And it is about corporations, but it's also, we were just kind of like what we did is we guessed a little bit what it was like. And then when we got the pilot, we called people from Amazon and Google. And like we got hooked up with some of them, and they basically just confirmed our suspicions. They're like, yeah, oh yeah, we're miserable. Like, we make money, we have healthcare, and we want to die. Like,
yeah.
it's like, you know, I think it's mostly just the idea of having a job you don't want, which is why we do comedy, because we don't want a job we don't want.
Correct.
And I think most people who don't follow their dreams kind of live a lot of horrible moments day to day.
Yeah,
and they really do.
There's sort of always that thought in their head of, well, what did I really want to do?
Yeah.
And I never tried.
I mean, we're lucky that we did it. We're just lucky that we even pursued it. Most people don't have the balls to do it.
And and lucky that we did it as young as we did it, because I met a lot of people where they opened for me on the road, and I'm like, hey, you're really funny. You should move out to LA. You should go to New York. And they're like, yeah, I got a wife and a two kids, and I can't tell them that, hey, I'm going to go make no money in Los Angeles.
100%. That's another reason why I quit my job in post-production, is like, I'm starting to make money here. Mm-hmm. And if I don't quit this right now, I'll never be able to live without it.
Yeah. Because you'll get used to that.
Yeah.
Which is a really strange mindset that you just had, where it's like, ooh, I'm making too much money. That's not good.
I know. Yeah.
How the chandelier store, that's a real thing.
Yeah, I worked at a chandelier store.
Why?
Do you know Lizzie Cooperman? Yeah. She's a comedian. So she had that job. I don't know how she got that job. She was maybe family friends with the guy who owned it. But it was this former architect. He's from Europe, and he owned this chandelier store. It was like a lot of European lighting. He just really loved that as a kid, and he would buy this stuff on like eBay, and he had a store where he sold it for way trumped up prices to like rich Americans. And so it was basically like a really fine light. Like I learned what a sconce was. Like I didn't know what that was.
I still don't know what that
is. Yeah, it's a light on your wall, and you have to be.
I thought it was
rich.
Something you put on a croissant.
Yeah, it's also that. Okay. You technically can put anything on a croissant.
It's also what the girls say when Brad says dwarf when he comes.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
They say sconce.
That's honestly pretty hot. Yeah. I'm gonna steal that. Yeah. But yeah, you just sell like really ridiculous looking lighting that is not it doesn't like help. It's not like good lighting. It just looks pretty cool.
Oh, really? Because the chandeliers that I feel like I've seen in my lifetime, I'm like, fuck, that looks dope. I wish I had that. I wish I had a chandelier right here.
Well, yeah, but those are...
Can I be in the commercial? That was, I think I really saw that.
I wish I had a chandelier right here.
Right here.
Yeah. I mean...
And then some guy comes and it's like, this is a weird commercial.
Did someone say chandelier here? Yeah.
Snoop Dogg put Morgan one in his car, Freeman. For God's sake.
Yeah.
Did he really?
Yeah. Snoop Dogg has a chandelier
exhibit
in his car.
Was that in MTV? Was that in Pimp My Ride?
Pimp My Ride.
No, that was like MTV Cribs where he goes, yo, man, this is my Snoop DeVille. I got a chandelier in that motherfucker.
He's so cool.
And it's like, he's got a chandelier in his car.
I would just sit in a place and all these rich people would come in. I remember one time this famous photographer came in and he was super high and he just pointed at things. And just like just anything, he was like high. Like, this is what rich people do, is they get high and buy stuff. And I was like, oh, that is such a level of wealth I could never achieve. But yeah, it sucked. I mean, it was just like rich, famous people coming in and like buying chandeliers and not caring about it. And I like got really I had this I was terrible at the job. I like had this blog called picturesofmehavingsex.tumblr.com where I would Photoshop weird shit of me having sex. It wasn't really me having sex, but I got caught by my boss for that because I had friended my boss's wife on Facebook, and I was posting on Facebook while I was there. So I just like fucked around.
Wait, so is this like you, like, are you Photoshopping yourself having sex with like a meteor or something?
Yes, and you kind of have to see it to understand. It's really insane, but
is it still up?
Pictures of me having sex.tumblr.com.
Hold on.
But it's really dumb and really stupid. And I would spend my time like writing jokes and making like weird blogs and like desperately trying to get into the comedy world while I worked this like minimum wage job at a chandelier store where rich people couldn't give a fuck about me. I had like holes in my sweaters and shit like that. And I just was doing open mics all the time and making sketches and hoping that shit happened.
Dude, but yes, man. I was doing a version of that, but pretending to be Wolverine.
Yeah, you worked at a theme park. Yeah. Yeah, I remember that.
So it's like, but same thing, dude. Like, I'd put in my hours, then I would make my sketches in between there, do open mics, and just go, I feel like I'm doing what I'm supposed, like, I'm putting in the
work. Pursuing a dream.
And I'm finding ways to enjoy it. You know what I'm saying? Like, the sketches stuff for me, and I'm sure for you too, was like huge.
Because you work
like,
your fucking ass off.
But you too, man, where it's like you get to control your shit. And that's where you feel like a little bit of sanity because you're like, all right, cool. I wrote this. I'm getting to put it up. And I'm because even with the open mic, the immediacy of the reaction, is a blessing and a curse. But with the making the video, you're like, you're kind of enjoying the whole thing. Even if it does get tricky and figuring something out, you're doing it collaboratively. Mm-hmm. And that to me is like so great. Mm-hmm. And I can only imagine it's on a whole new level with the show.
Yeah. It's beautiful. I mean, I feel really lucky in it. It feels good to know that I made the right choice to do it. And I think what's cool about a minimum wage job is like, you have to work, you have to do comedy, and then all your free time, you still have to work.
Yeah.
Like, you can't, you have no choice but to spend your whole life, you're working to work. And that's great.
Friends and family don't think that, right? Yeah. They're like, cool, show now. Now what? The Emmys, Oscars, when Spielberg calls.
And they also think you're, they know you, so they know you're not that funny. You know what I mean? Like even if you're funny, they're like, you're not that funny.
Oh, really? You have friends or family saying, like, it's not a show, it's bigger.
My family doesn't think I'm that funny, but they're happy for me.
Oh,
but
good.
But they're like, yeah, you've done a good job, but they're not, like, laughing at me when I talk to them. You know what I mean? Yeah. They're all crazy and mentally ill.
Have you had people come out of the woodwork and, you know, people that you've either haven't heard of for a while that's been like, oh, shit, thanks, Mr., you know.
We had a commercial for the show on the Sugar Bowl. And that was cool
because
I went to school in Tennessee.
Wow.
So that's like it was like an football. SEC kind of thing. Yeah, so that was like, I was like,
hey, is that Jew?
Yeah. That's pretty much exactly what it was. And no, but like, I'm fine with that.
Yeah.
So that was cool because I could be like, because I feel like everyone's goal in Hollywood is just to crush it at a high school reunion. You know what I mean? That's like the only reason we move out. I mean, what else are
we motivated? Well, they doubt you so much when you leave.
So I've gotten a
lot. Put it in a very simple phrase. That's pretty much all what we're trying to do.
Dude, the amount of people at my...
Oprah went to her high school reunion.
Yeah.
Did she really?
She did a whole show about it. And it's like, all right, Oprah.
Yeah.
That I love you, do that.
But fuck you.
Yeah. Like, that's crazy.
Oprah shows up.
Yeah, exactly.
Because even if
I'm doing so much better than all of you.
Yeah, but they're pumped. I would be. If Oprah was in my class and didn't show up, I'd be so bummed. I'd be like,
right,
fuck
be like,
bitch.
Man, I went to school with Oprah.
Yeah.
She should come back and, you know, say unless hi.
You know,
give us all cars.
Yeah. If she shows up and doesn't bring anything, are you bummed? Or are you more pumped if she doesn't show up but sends everybody like a gift bag?
If I were Oprah.
Like her favorite things?
Yeah.
High school reunion style? Her favorite things in high school? So you're so bummed? It's like oatmeal raisin cookies.
It's like, wait, a 1955 Trapper Keeper?
Yeah.
Why the fuck do I need that?
Oh my God, Trapper
Keeper. 55? Keepers. Is that when she went to high school?
I have no idea.
Is she 110?
I have no idea.
Is that math?
No clue. Don't trust
me. Wait, did you go to yours?
No, but now I'm going to go. Like that. I've been waiting for this moment.
You will attach an iPad onto your suit and just have it play the trailer for corporate the entire time as you're walking around.
Oh, I can't wait.
So like people reached out to you when the
commercial went? Yeah, but it's been mostly nice. I mean, no, you know, like people are just like, I think going to Hollywood also, like, I'm 34. It's taken me a minute. You know what I mean? To do anything. And so I think people are like, oh, really? I thought he, like, died. Like, you know, like...
Oh, you're still doing that?
Yeah, and it's, like, kind of cool, and people, for the most part, you know, they have kids, they're in, you know, they're doing whatever they do at 34, and it's been mostly nice, but it also feels like, all right, cool. Yeah, I won. I'm not going to deny it's there.
So do you feel an added pressure now that you have the show, like now when you're doing a spot at the Comedy Store?
Oh yeah.
Are you like worried that people can be like, "Oh, well this guy's got a show, so he's obviously going to be really good."
I'm terrified. Yeah. I mean, and that's part of like getting back into it now. It's like you just have to get over it. It doesn't matter. You know what I mean? That's the best part about the store too. Is just go up and go up and go up, you know? Mm-hmm. But yeah, I think it's terrifying. It's like, oh God, now I'll definitely be called out on being a fraud. Like now this is when it's going to happen. The con is up, but then you just do it and do it and do it. And it doesn't matter.
Yeah,
it'll be fine.
I feel like a lot of times, and this goes in all industries, people think that everyone else is watching them and caring what they're doing.
They're just
like,
terrified about their own set.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. They're thinking about their own damn lives. No one gives a fuck
and
about you.
And just say nice set to the person. And then it's like, great set. You weren't listening. Yeah. We all know you weren't listening.
You got to do the Seth Meyers show recently to promote the show.
That was cool.
Was that your first time doing a late night thing?
I've never done stand-up on late night, and I've certainly never done the couch. It was cool. The coolest thing about it was my dad. Well, there's a lot of cool things about it. But one of the coolest things was my dad came. My dad's 84. Mm-hmm. I have an old dad. And he has walks with a cane. You know, his hearing isn't great. But he came. He loves famous people. And he was able to be there and see that. And I got one of those moments where he's like, I'm proud of you. Like in the like father-son way where you're like, okay. Both of us could die now. You can die now, Dad, because you told me you were proud.
Not me. I got a lot of life left to live. I got a couple super miles to bang, but okay.
So that felt good. But no, it's cool. I mean, honestly, what's really cool about late night shows is seeing how hard it is to run. They shoot a show every fucking day.
Yeah.
That's amazing to see how professional, how many good people have to do their work well in order for that to happen. It was cool to go out on the couch. It's weird when you you walk out into set and you're sitting on a couch. It just feels sort of like, am I in a living room? Like, why? Am I really that interested? What, like, what do I have to say here? Yeah.
What do I do with my legs?
Yeah.
But it was cool, and he was super nice. And he came and introduced himself before, and you're like, oh, he's sharp, he's cool, he's nice, he's funny. He knows how to make you feel comfortable immediately. And it was just cool. It's like, I've done that now. I can't believe I got to that point where I'm sitting on a fucking couch. Like, I met Jake Tapper, you know, the CNN journalist.
Oh, nice.
And I got to shake his hand, and
he
was
tweeted
like,
at you.
Yeah, because I just said, basically, when I met him, I was like, hi, I'm also named Jake, and he didn't give a fuck. You know what I mean? He's just like, okay, cool, good luck with your show. And so I tweeted at him, and then he tweeted back, and that was thrilling.
Yeah. Yeah, because and when, especially a guy like Jake Tapper, where it's like, in between him bashing the president of the United States and the president responding,
he tweeted a gif at me. Yeah, and I was like, life is great. Yeah, this is so dumb. It's cool. Also, they like take you up this back elevator, and it's like, you get out of a car and you go straight into an elevator, and these two people take you up, and it's like CIA, and you go into this room and all this makeup, all for you to go on TV for 3 minutes, and it's hilarious.
Yeah. Was it a little bit easier that you did it with your co-star?
Yes. Yeah. And also, stand up makes the couch so much easier, because to me, like, stand up is great on its own, obviously, but stand up gives you the gift of reading a room, which is the whole thing. That's everything in life. Pitch meetings, anything in life, I'm just more confident because, like, I can read a room. Like, I can read
people.
Dude,
I was just talking about that today.
Yeah.
That's
the whole reason.
Being able to read the room off stage because of on stage, like, it's an invaluable skill in life.
And if you don't, even if I stopped doing stand-up now, having done it for a long time would pay off huge for me in my career and in my life, in dating, in all that stuff. Dude. It's like I'm reading people, and I can, and all it is when you're sitting on that couch is those people want to laugh.
Yeah.
You just have to kind of feel their energy and respond to it.
I've been talking about this on stage on my guys not reading the room right now and getting in trouble, and girls just as guilty, and percentage is much lower, but my junior and high school girlfriend putting a finger at my butt didn't read the room. Nothing about what was happening would have suggested that that was the next.
She rimmed the room.
Yeah. But it is a, easier said than done thing, but it's like, think about how many social functions you've been at where.
But it's that thing that you can't buy. And it's that we have from just doing it over and over and bombing forever and learning, like, oh, I just have to respond. It's like this, it's like energy that you have to respond to that is worth millions of dollars potentially.
Yeah. And then you have obtained all these skills now where you can be in any room and be able to talk to people. And then when you're in a crowded room, and you can talk to anyone, you're just gonna find the comic.
Yep.
You're just gonna go 100%. Up and you're just gonna go find the comedian and be like, okay, I can talk to you.
It does become a thing where it's like, I mean, I have friends that don't do comedy, but it's way easier when they do comedy. It's like I totally relate. There's like a language we speak, or there's like an inherent understanding. And I wish I were more interesting and could talk to people outside of comedy. But in general, it's like, if it's a comedian, like, we can figure it out.
Yeah.
And it's like easier to understand where they're coming from.
Brad put down here, you're obsessed with knives on Instagram.
Yes.
now this is not the other Jake Weissman.
No, it's me.
This is you. You had like knives in the shape of an American flag. You had that scene from Suicide Squad where like the Joker is laying in a giant circle of knives. I was like, no one, that would never fucking happen. And then I met you and I'm like, yeah, that could happen.
Okay, here's the thing.
Oh, God.
I won't say too much
about
it.
I've killed a lot of people.
I feel like, for me, I'm not like a hot person, so I'm not going to get followers because of how I look. And I do think that a lot of comedians, not you guys, but a lot of comedians just want to be hot. And they don't want to admit it. They're like, no, I care about comedy. And then in front of every photo is their face. Mm. And it's like, and men and women. This is not a gender
absolutely.
Thing.
Yeah. No,
and it's like, if you're going to admit you want to be hot, then I'm fine with it. But they don't. They're like, look, I'm in front of the Eiffel Tower. And it's like, why is your face in there? You know? And so I just kind of wanted to do something sillier and weirder that would call attention to myself and make fun of people a little bit. It's become something way crazier. And now I'm stuck inside the joke. Because I put up thousands of photos of weapons. And so it's a little like, at some point someone's going to be like, you're the problem.
Yeah.
But I just think it's funny at this point like Michelle Buteau is a hilarious comedian. She told me, she's like, Jake, fuck you, when I'm in my kitchen cooking, I think of you because I see that thing and I think that motherfucker, and I want to seep into people's heads. And now it's just mm-hmm. a really dumb, long joke.
Well, now you know that if you ever have a crazy scandal moment, they're going to go to your Instagram and be like, and he posts pictures of knives.
He was saying it all along. Day. Yeah, yeah.
He's the crazy one.
I also think that if anyone kills me in a Selena way by stabbing me, I deserve it. Like there's no question I'm getting a knife in the
heart.
Do
you have a president of a fan club?
I probably do, and they're probably obsessed with knives. Like they're just like, this is the person who gets me, and I'm gonna kill him because yeah. that'll bring us closer together. Like that's who my
oh,
fan
God.
Is.
Is that
and
what happened with Selena?
I think so.
I mean, you know what? You know, what'd be funny is this person for you doesn't even know you're a comedian.
I know
they're following you for the knives.
Yeah, no, it's definitely worrisome, and it was a mistake I made, but I'm sticking to it.
Yeah. Have you had any sort of a corporate or Comedy Central meetings about social media and posting, and has the knife thing come up or any other
knife thing? They haven't told me not to do it yet, but a few times they've like there was a VP I was talking to. I took a photo at Seth Meyers where I was holding a knife like in front of like the God. Sign. I was like, you got to take a photo like at backstage, and the VP was there and he goes, oh God, that again. That shit again. And I was like, well, dude, what do you want me to do?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
It's kind of my thing. You let me now. Have the show.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, who's dumber?
This is who I am. Like, I'm sorry I am the way I am.
Yeah. And you have a lot of great people in this show.
Yes.
You have a lot of very talented people. You have maybe my favorite person to follow on Twitter in this show, and that's Aparna.
I mean, the funniest, one of the funniest comedians ever.
She yeah. really is, man. I think when I watched her, I think for the first time a lot was at Moon Tower last year. Dude. And I was like, What?
This you're, so original.
Where's? I mean, maybe one of the greatest brains I've ever
yeah
listened to.
The best writer yep. and so original. She has an original voice. She's hilarious. So funny and very dark. Like what's great is like she has a real darkness to her, but yeah. she doesn't look like
so
that.
Sweet. Mm-hmm.
So it can come out like it. The darkness comes in a really great package. So funny.
How did was that an easy casting?
She's. I've just known her since I started comedy, and she's just been. I'm like a huge fan of hers, and yeah. she's also my friend. And it's like we can get a Aparna in it. It just feels like
cool.
She's sort of famous, but not famous enough to where you can't get her yet. So we're lucky that she hasn't really done as well as she should have yet. Sure. You know what I mean? It's always like, and like Baron Vaughn similarly is
yeah,
a genius.
So, yeah.
He's a genius.
Yeah, he's
and
so
he
good.
And he's doing well, but like we can still get him. And that's great. Yeah. Like I love when my friends aren't successful enough yet to where I can still reach them, you know?
Yeah, because when you're like, oh man, but who'd be great for this part? Mario Lopez. Yeah. But we can't get Mario.
If you can text someone, like I shouldn't be able to text Aparna or Baron, but I can still text them so you can still get them. But yeah, we also have Lance Reddick, who's like the best actor from The Wire. He's like, when he said yes, that was weird. Like, I guess he needed money or something. But like the fact that
you're
said
making
yes,
your you know, your wish list, right?
Yeah. It's weird. I the further you go into Hollywood, even doing stand up or whatever you're doing, you do meet some people that are like kind of like people you really admire. You're like, oh, I didn't know I would be friends with you. Like, that's weird.
Yep.
Like, this is kind of almost sad.
Cool
a little
now.
Bit. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and also, we've had him on the podcast almost four or five times, but Adam and I can text Dana Carvey now.
Yeah, like,
and
the
that's
best comedian
really
ever.
Fucking weird for us. It never gets old.
Because they're just people who were older than you, who did the same shit you did. Like,
right.
you know, some of the best comedians around, and you see them at the store all the time. You know, it's just like, but they're the same age.
And even people to get on your show, like, it's like these people also want to work too.
Yeah.
Like, and I think a lot of people sometimes assume like, oh, I can't get, you know, I don't know, Scott Bakula. That's the first thing that came to my head.
I mean, I think we all know we can get Bakula.
Yeah, by the way, we can get Bakula is
and
uttered
I've
in every cat. but there are people that seem unobtainable that, you know, it's just a never
ending. It's
really
interesting.
Yeah. And I'm sure you'll see that as you get deeper into season 7, 8, 9, 10.
Yeah. And also, people, I firmly believe a lot of actors have children we don't know about. And so they need all the money they can get. And they need that
when
little Comedy Central
has
art.
Apple, she could have kumquat, pear, peach, raspberry.
And I firmly
whole
believe.
Whole fruit salad. Yeah.
That's what, like Ray Liotta doing all those commercials.
Yeah.
I'm like, he definitely has 20 kids. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, why is he doing this? Yeah.
Also, what a cool thing to be at a point. To do a commercial that's not, because, you know, Alex Trebek does, I think they're like, I don't know if it's Life Alert or Life Lock.
Reverse mortgages?
I don't know. He does something like
something
that. But
like
I'm like, why wouldn't you put like Trebek in a Bud Light commercial?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
He's famous enough to be in
I
one.
I would actually like it more. I would,
yeah.
Yeah.
But also maybe he's like, nah, I'm not a beer guy. I'm a mortgage guy. Yeah, I only sell what I believe in.
I get fucked up on mortgage. Yeah.
and I believe in reverse home loans.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know.
But, so what's more press, more stand-up? Are you going to kind of sit back and the show do its
thing?
We're
hoping we get to shoot a second season. We're going to, you know, if the show does well in the first 2 weeks, hopefully we get to do that. I think, you know, we've been doing a lot of press because obviously the show coming out is like everything, you know. Mm-hmm.
Comedy Central Wednesday is 10 p.m.
And I've tried to be kind of focused on that. And then, you know, then I can kind of get back to my life a little bit and like do stand up and like clean my house and like, you know, do sit ups. You know, just like because I've been so like I've just been like really like I got to do all this stuff because this is the one chance that I have to like make a first impression like this. And then I am going to breathe a little bit. But it's fun. It's all incredibly fun. It's just like, it's like too much fun a little. Like it's mm-hmm. all your wedding. You know, it's like you're having a wedding and then another wedding and another wedding. Everyone's being so nice to you. And mm-hmm. it's just, it's exhilarating, but it's exhausting.
Have you had a, have you had a big I just got money purchase? Like I just got a show purchase?
When we found out we got the series,
yeah,
I got cable. I was like, you know what? Because I was like, I know that sounds ridiculous, but it is. It's you don't need cable.
No.
And I
especially now.
I don't really even watch it that much. I watch sports on it, but I don't really watch it. I just want it to be like, oh yeah, I have cable. Like that's all I wanted. Because I said if I ever get a show, I'm gonna get cable. Because I didn't have it for so many years, mm-hmm. I would just watch a DVD. But cable is a real luxury. It's a lot of money, and it feels good. It feels good. To
I
have
loved
cable.
It like. Everyone's expecting you to be like, I bought a car, I bought a gold-plated fish tank, I bought a diamond dildo.
No.
That's actually the name of a porn star.
Yeah. Is that really?
I don't know.
Oh, I honestly would have totally believed that.
But you're like, no, I got cable.
Yeah, I got cable, and I feel rich. And that's all you're, when you're rich, you just want to feel rich, and I feel rich.
Well, you will be rich, because I think the show's going to go 10 seasons. I hope it does.
Thanks, mm-hmm. man.
It's really fucking funny, and you're really great in it.
Thanks, man.
And you should be pumped that you create something that does showcase your talents and skill sets.
Thanks.
On all fronts, you know?
I feel pretty lucky. I feel like I got the opportunity, which is incredible. Like, it's product of hard work, but it's also luck, and I feel like we did a good job, and I stand by it. I'm sure, you know, you've all done things where you're like, you did it for the work and you're lucky to do it. You're like, I don't know if I like it, but I actually like the show. So I feel lucky.
Yeah, that's got to feel good to know that, like, oh, I put out something that's good.
Yeah, I think it's good.
Because we've all done projects where we're like, yeah, you guys don't have to watch that.
Yeah,
it's
please don't.
Fine.
Yeah.
It's, I'm happy with it. But this one, everyone should watch it, whether you worked in an office, whether you haven't, because maybe you're arts guys like us, but you want to laugh at people that do have those jobs. Mm-hmm. Yes, absolutely.
If you ever had a job you didn't like, I think you'll like the show.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah. I've worked at Hot Topic.
Yeah.
So
that's awesome. That's your show.
Yeah. Oh, it really is.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, Dwarf working at Hot Topic. The best part is that I dressed pretty much how I dress now, back when I worked there.
I love that.
So that means that when they hired me, they just looked at me with all their gauges and mohawks and piercings and tattoos and just went, he's a midget. That's pretty weird.
Yeah.
Weird enough.
I do think that's your show. I think that's like a really pretty good show. Yeah.
Wednesday is on Comedy Central. After corporate comes Hot Topic Dwarf.
watch Don't say anymore. Let them be surprised.
Okay, we'll do.
Good night, everybody.
Thanks for listening to the About Last Night podcast with Brad Williams and Adam Ray. Boy, they're a lot of fun, huh? Why don't you subscribe on iTunes to this fucking podcast? Give them a 5-star rating so this midget and this Jew can feel good about themselves for a couple minutes. Also, get on your iPhone or Android and get the podcast app. You can also listen to it on Stitcher or aboutlastnightpodcast.com, where you can hear past episodes with great guests like Lisa Kudrow, Paul Feig, Kevin Nealon, Bob Saget, Dion Cole, Chris D'Elia, Adam Devine, Michael McDonald, Jaleel White, Bud Friedman, Steve-O, Harlan Williams, Tom Arnold, Ron Funches, Rick Glassman, Blake Anderson, Anders Holm, Jessamay Peluso, Joey McIntyre, and many, many more. I'm Tony Danza. Thanks for listening to the About Last Night podcast. Good night. That's it, right? You got it? Sweet. Boy, it smells good in that booth, by the way. What kind of candle is that? Hanukkah Willow? Nice.